Mary Ellen, tell us about your journey as an artist. I understand you came to us from New York.
Yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn. I went to Brooklyn College. I did my graduate work in Ohio, and I got my first teaching job at Western in 1966. And so I've been in Kalamazoo since 66. And that year, when I was new in town and didn't know anybody, I took my first class at the KIA. And I've been taking classes at the KIA ever since. I taught there for a number of years in the jewelry department. I have been very involved in the art community from that point forward.
So what got you to be an artist? Is there some mentor, some great influence, childhood event?
I just always like to make things. You know, I made all my clothes for my dolls, and mother made all of our clothes. And so I think we were just a kind of a making family. And
I like that, a making family.
Yeah. I remember going to a meeting, a Girl Scout meeting when I was a kid, and one of the girls served us coffee or tea in mugs that she had made. And I thought, that is so cool.
It
and
is.
So when we had an art center, I thought, I'm going to take a class and see what I can do. And That's how I got into this a more formal training of what I was doing.
Well, you're a multimedia artist, so your range is quite wide. You know, a lot of people will pick one and stay with it, but you're in glass, you're in fabric, you're in jewelry, ceramics.
I like learning new things. I'm a constant student. You know, I really enjoyed my undergraduate and graduate work, and then I would take seminars and such after that. And that was in my field, in children's literature and such. But the same was true with the other kinds of media. I took some jewelry, and I really enjoyed that, and I did some photography. And I would do it for about 10 years. I mean, I've been doing this since the 60s, and so I've got a good 10 years in taking classes in photography at the KIA, and overlapping with 10 or 15 years in ceramics. And so I've been taking classes for a long time. And what I've discovered in my older age now is that having the skills for a variety of different media make you think about the media differently, because you can start to put things together that people who only do clay, for instance, might not think of doing a figure with copper hands.
Yeah.
And because I can do the copper work, I can do the soldering, I can do whatever. And so it just opens doors for me to creatively think about stuff and to problem solve. And that's, for me, that's a lot of it, is just, it's the making, it's the problem solving. It's not so much I want to make a piece to sell or something like that. I really enjoy the process.
What gets you going usually? Is it an interesting material find, or it's an image, or?
You know, it can be any of the ones. I've taken a lot of travel since I've retired. I retired in 2000 from Western, and that's when I started teaching at the KIA in the jewelry department. And then I did a lot of bird watching. I had not done much travel earlier than that, and so I traveled all around the world bird watching, and I discovered in different places different things caught my eye. It might be the fabric in a place. It might be the textures of the wall textures in a village. It might be anything like that. So I started taking with me some little two-part silicone molds that you use for making hearing aids.
Yeah.
You know, they put the two parts together and they stick it in your ear, and in 5 minutes it's set up.
Right.
Well, I bought the little things and I mixed them up and I would put them on a tree.
Oh.
And then in 5 minutes, I had texture from the tree. Or I put them on, we came across some flamingos that were dead on the edge of a lake. And so I did it on some flamingo bird
feathers?
Bones.
Oh, bones.
Bones,
oh.
Yeah. And an elephant dung. And so when I came back to Kalamazoo then, I was able to use these molds to cast them in some wax, and then use the wax to do burnout castings and make them in silver or in copper or in brass. And so I then use those components for some jewelry I was making. Anything can inspire. And then when you have this component that's, you don't know what you're going to do with it. I mean, this is a cool texture. Then your ideas have to start swinging. You know, you have to start thinking about, and one thing leads to another. And before you know it, you're making something that you could never have even thought of before, because one piece has led you down a direction that's led you to a different, total different direction. And wow, you know, you go back and you look and go, I had a great time.
That's fascinating, because you have this eye that can look at anything and see it beautiful. You brought into the studio today, I wish people could see this, it's a brooch that's made out of elephant dung. Well, a mold of.
Made from the elephant dung mold. Not.
I mean,
there's no dung in it.
Who looks at this and thinks, that would look wonderful on my sweater?
I know. But it's a very nice, tight texture. You'd be amazed.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is it that at Western you taught English instead of jewelry or ceramics or some art form? Not that English isn't an art form.
English is very important.
Yeah.
But I was, when I was in undergraduate school, I had this wonderful teacher, Marion Starling, and she taught the children's literature class. And I was an English major, and I had a friend, Shirley, who was an education major. And each semester, we would take a class together. And so this was one that she could count for her major, and I could count for mine. And I just got hooked. I love children's literature. The best children's literature is as good or better than Shakespeare. You know, if you've read Where the Wild Things Are, or, you know, some of the really terrific pieces that are not just books, they are great literature. And I really like that. And I like the idea of helping teachers understand that this is available for them to teach to their kids or to read to their kids, and then to help the kids get an idea of going beyond the story and begin to understand the aesthetics of. And so that was part of what I did in the children's lit classes, and I really enjoyed that. So there's always been a bit of art in what I've been doing.
No argument there that certainly literature is an art form. Do you write at all?
No. I think there are a lot of good writers out there, and I'm not one of them.
And yet you have used literature to inspire some of your pieces.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, literature is, you know, nature inspires, but literature also, somebody else's ideas pulling together something that you've looked at and you haven't thought about that way, and suddenly, boing, you know, and then you go off into a different kind of direction. So, you know, yes. And I often try I curate a number of shows, and I try to set up a theme that has that kind of quality to it, so that the artist who is doing a piece for the show is not just doing a piece. Well, the theme show that we're doing right now is a bird show, and I just don't want a bunch of pretty birds. I mean, if that's what they want to do, that's fine. But I gave them some poetry that had bird images and such in it to think about, and to think about how they, as a child, interconnected with birds, or maybe birding with their father, or what have you, so that the idea of doing something about birds is something that they are connected with birds, not just birds out there.
It's interesting how things inspire you and your travels. For instance, you learned how to paint silk while in Mexico.
Yeah, I didn't take many international vacations when I was teaching. The school year is really hard on trying to get out and do things. And so, but in the 70s, I went to Cancun to a Club Med with a girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And there was a French woman there in the arts and crafts studio who taught painting on silk. And I got hooked. I got absolutely hooked. I mean, she was sitting on the beach, I'm painting silk. And when I got back to the States, it was before silk painting became popular, and you couldn't get the dyes here. So I had to order all of my dyes from France. And so it was exciting because it was something that nobody else was doing. And so I couldn't get information from other people. It was before the internet. And so it was a real investigation to figure out how to do this and how to keep doing this and how to make it work for me.
Ever thought of making your own dyes? I know there's a movement underway in the fabric world where there are some people who are taking natural dyes.
Absolutely.
From plants and flowers and beans, coffee beans. And,
yes, and I think it's very exciting, but it's science. It's science in a way that I'm not. You have to do a lot of measuring, and you have to know what interacts with what. And you have to know, I mean, every fabric takes dye differently. So do you need to have salt with it, or do you need to have vinegar with it? You know, are there mordants? What do you have to do to make this thing work? And then how do you make it so that it doesn't disappear? I mean, so that it's got a
wash
kind of—
out.
Yeah. And so that's a whole nother line of thinking. And I'm frankly more of an approximator.
Okay.
You know, I want things to sort of go together, but I don't really, you know, right angles are not always my friend. It's just a little bit off.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that. My aesthetic allows for me to be a little more relaxed, because if I get too uptight, then I stop seeing the whole thing. I see the part.
And it seems also that when you do your jewelry, maybe these days more so, I don't know, you sometimes have a way of getting a statement in there that people may or may not notice. The way I found you, I had been talking to somebody else on this radio show, and they noticed the earrings I was wearing. And they said, oh, Mary Ellen Haynes made those. And they're called resistor earrings and made from an electric
resistor.
Yeah. How do you work some of these themes in to make a statement?
Well, everything I do is about me.
Well, sure.
And my vision of the world and communicating that, but not, I hope, in a didactic kind of way, but it just, it comes out because I'm me, it comes out this way.
Sure.
I've got to say that I am not a hugely political animal, but I'm not a really comfortable person in the world the way it's moving right now. And so about the time, it was in January of 18, when the women's movement was going to do the pink hats. I was making pink hats for people and such. Hmm. And I decided that I needed to do something more than that. I can't march. I'm old. I've got bad knees. I can't march. But I decided I would make some kind of a protest earring. So I made 300 pairs of resist earrings in January of last year, and I passed them out to everybody. I was not selling them. I was just giving them. And so there are 300 pairs of resist earrings all over this country. Now, actually, I sent some to a friend in Germany because she wanted resist earrings. I mean, I'd walk into a grocery store and I'd say to somebody, would you like a pair of earrings? And then I would tell them what it's about and they go, oh yeah, I could do that. The idea that you are conscious of your place in this world. And if there's something that you don't like, that you do something about it, you resist, I'm not telling you what to do, but you do what makes you connect with this world and make it a better world.
Yeah.
So I want to do another resist project this year, but I'm really tied up until the middle of June, and then I'm going to get going on it. And this time I think maybe I'll do pendants or pins or something. The men kept saying, well, what's for us? And I said, well, unless you'd like to have earrings, that's all I did that year.
Yeah.
And when it was done, it was done. I wasn't making any more of them.
Through the month of May, you have a show at the Epic called The World in Flux. So that's got a theme to it, too, I think.
Yeah. Most of the shows that I am in or I curate have some kind of a theme or a way I hope that people will connect with the work that they're doing, and then all the work in the show should connect, maybe. But for this show, four of us, four women from Kalamazoo, Nancy Payne, Nancy Stroop, Pam Nivola and I decided we would do a show together, and we would do a show that in some way reflected our world. And we started off with the idea of maybe endangered species, but I didn't want to do a whole show of animal kinds of things and such, So we broadened that out. So we're dealing with the things that are changing, things that are in flux, things that are on our radar as something that we are prioritizing because maybe it's not moving in the direction we want. And so a couple of people are dealing with elements of migrants. A couple of people are dealing with the endangered species kind of thing, or the change in the climate, or some other aspect of the kind of world as it moves forward. I'm doing some things that deal with, I'm afraid of the loss of freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the banned books, how the language is being limited by or taken over by pundits who have not necessarily the best thoughts and want to limit. And I'm all for more rather than less. You know, I think you really want to expand people's horizons. You don't want to limit what they can do. And so I'm doing a series of small bowls which are dealing with it. I'm doing three of them I'm going to do on banned books. And I've chosen Walt Whitman, who was banned. Hop on Pop, Dr. Seuss. Was a banned book in the United States. I mean, the banning for such stupid reasons and such. Yeah. But so I was kind of playing with that. And then I'm also doing the fake news kind of thing. And, you know, I'm not trying to be a kind of a political person, but more of a philosophical about what's going on point of view. And again, I don't want
it
to be
didactic. Well, it touches on our lives in every way,
Yeah.
So I don't know how you can maybe calling it political is the wrong way to approach it. It's just being aware of our lives.
Yes.
Our communities.
Yes.
You know, you're a wonderful artist in so many different ways, but it's not just about your art. As time goes on, you have made a real point out of helping other artists, established as well as new, and curating, as you've mentioned. It's not just doing your thing. You're curating shows that give a stage to other artists as well. Talk about that.
Kalamazoo is a terrific town for that, really, because of the art hops and all of those kinds of things. So we have a really marvelous art community. I really enjoy working with a group of artists on a particular project. And so I will ask artists who know who everybody's name, you know, Mary Hatch or Denise Lasecki or Michael Dunn or, you know, everybody knows these names. And then I will ask some people who maybe have never shown in the area before or are new just out of school or and I will put together a group of 20 to 25 artists around a theme and invite them to do a show. And then we usually have one meeting during the course of this, which nobody has to come to because I'm not going to tell anybody what they need to do, but where they can socialize, they can talk about the work they're doing, they can socialize a little bit, they can be, do some networking so that some of the people who have only heard of so-and-so can come and actually meet them. And so I will do a little bit of mentoring. I will help people with vitas and resumes and things like that or artist statements. Or they connect with somebody else who can help them to do that. And so that it's a wonderful big community, and it has room for a lot more people to be taken into that community and treated, you know, with a great deal of respect and such. And I just like to be part of that. You know, I've lived a long time, and I've gained so much from this community and from my time on Earth and such. And it's time to give back, and this is one of the things that I can do is to coordinate because. Doing an art hop means you generally have to do a whole show, which means that you need to have maybe 30 or 40 new pieces of work. If you're in a theme show, it's a one or two pieces. You're getting to meet these other people. It's a different kind of experience, and it's very good for building their vitas and such. You know, if they're young people, it's just going out. It's a good way for them to meet curators at people who run the museums or the, you know, Donna down at the Carnegie in Three Rivers or the people at the Arts Council here or, you know. So it's the right thing for me to be doing right now, I think. Yeah.
Well, you're a treasure to our community, Mary Ellen, and we appreciate you.
Oh, thank you.